Good morning. My name is John Leach. I'm powerless over alcohol. Hi, everybody. It's important that I say I'm powerless over alcohol. It don't tell me in the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous to admit that I'm an alcoholic. Sometimes when I go to AA meetings today, I think I'm in a Heinz's program. They call it 57 varieties. Well, as far as I'm concerned, there's only one program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's in a thing they call the Big Book. Before I get started, I'd like to take the opportunity to thank the committee for giving me the honor to be here today. It is an honor and it is a privilege. And for the hospitality they've shown to my wife, Jackie, and myself. Thanks a lot. But for an alcoholic of my type to admit that I was powerless took an act of humility. See, I had a lot of pride and I had a lot of ego. I don't know about you, and it's not important I know about you. It's important I know about me. Because I'm my problem. See, alcohol was my solution. I never drank alcohol one time in my life, and I drank for many, many years to get in trouble. I used to drink alcohol to solve my problems. But instead of solving the problems, it created problems. So I try not to complicate this program, because I was very fortunate. I got in with old timers in Akron, Ohio. And there's some here this morning, and I want to personally thank all old timers in here for your dedication, your courage to keep the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous open for me. Because I was one of these ones that never got into this program for a long time. It took me 9 years to get a year. No, in and out, in and out. So if there's anybody in the room this morning, I'm going to give you the advice that they gave to me. It's got the same problem. It's in and out. Keep coming back. Because if you don't keep coming back, I don't know where you're gone. And thank God I kept coming back or I wouldn't be here this morning. There's no doubt in my mind by the time I'm finished, I'll have convinced me that I was living a life of total insanity. I've never met an alcoholic yet that lived a normal life. I don't live in a normal alcoholic home. I call it squirrel cage, you know. And it was hard for me, you know, to admit these things, you know. See, I never set out in life to be an alcoholic. And I've never met the person yet that set out in life to be an alcoholic, you know. And I'm no grateful I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful I know I'm an alcoholic, and I'm grateful I can do something about it. And thank God to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because there's no doubt in my mind, there's not a shadow of doubt in my mind this morning, it's only through God's grace and the program and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm here. Because there were many times in my life that I didn't want to be here. You know, because through all that sick thinking. And I'm a real alcoholic this morning. And I'll be a real alcoholic to the day I die, and when I die, I'm a dead real alcoholic. I hear these people saying they're recovered alcoholics. I don't see what it tells you that in the book. Nowhere in the book can I see that. It says, I recovered from the disease of alcoholism. And I've been around this game for a few years, and I've worked in the field for a few years. And there are people treating the disease of alcoholism and they don't know what it is. So how can you treat it if you don't know what the disease is? What they're doing, they're treating the symptoms and the effects. They're not treating the primary problem. AA treats the primary problem. The disease of alcoholism is character defects. That's what it tells me when I read it. You know, when I stole $20 out of my wife's purse, that wasn't the problem. That was only a symptom of the problem. And she needed this $20 to get her and the kids milk and bread because they had nothing to eat. But I needed to drink more. But stealing the $20 was only a symptom of the primary problem. What was the primary problem? I was dishonest. I was selfish. I was inconsiderate. They call them character defects. And this is where I lived for many, many years. Many, many years. You know, and I had this sponsor, one of these old timers, you know, and they didn't talk to you nice, you know. They used to say things like, dummy, you know. And he told me, he says, you've got to make a decision, John. I says, but Russ, I've got a hard time making decisions, you know. I says, every time I make them, they don't work out. He says, no, because you're an alcoholic. And I says, anyway, I don't have anything to wall over to God, you know. You know, when you're homeless, you're penniless, you're worthless, you're useless, you're jobless, you're familyless, what have you got to wall? Bankrupt in every aspect of my life. Bankrupt in every aspect of my life. And know what he says to me? He says, dummy, that's not what it means. I says, well, what does it mean? He says, all your will is your thinking, and all your life is the actions of your thinking. Now I'm here to tell you this morning, if you don't think it, you don't drink it. And I'm here to tell you this morning, if you don't think it, you don't feel it. And I'm here to tell you this morning, if you don't think it, you don't do it. And that's what I've got. And that's what I'll have to the day I die. I've got not got a drinking problem, but I've got a thinking problem. It tells me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, unless there's a complete psychic change, there is very little hope for recovery. And I believe that. And you know, we're doing things in AA. I wonder what we're doing. When new people come into this program, know what we tell them to do? We tell them to think. Why should we tell a sick alcoholic mind to think? My sponsor told me not to think. He says, we will do your thinking for you. And when I came here, I don't know if I was an atheist or agnostic. I don't know what I was. But I didn't buy this God stuff. So I turned my will and my life over to carry my sponsor. He was a power greater than me. He had done something that I hadn't done. He had proven that he could stay sober and live in sobriety. And that's what all this is about. This isn't about being sober. My daughter's got a dog. And it's 11 years old, you know, and it's never had a drink in its life. And you know, it still wants to bite me. It still got character defects. You know, this is sobriety. What is sobriety? Sobriety is living by spiritual principles. You know, I like to describe the third step like the three rabbits. There were three rabbits. And one was called Foot, and one was called Foot, Foot, and one was called Foot, Foot, Foot. And Foot and Foot, Foot and Foot, Foot, Foot was walking down the road this day, and near the past the beer joint. And Foot says to Foot, Foot and Foot, 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 let's go in for a drink. So Foot and Foot, Foot and Foot, Foot, Foot went in for a drink. And they sat up at the bar, you know. And the bartender says to Foot, what would you like to drink? And Foot says, oh, just give me a double. So then he went to Foot, Foot, and he says to Foot, Foot, what would you like to drink? And Foot, Foot says, I'll have the same as Foot. So then he went to Foot, 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 and he says to Foot, 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 what would you like to drink? And Foot, Foot, Foot says, I'll have the same as Foot, Foot, and Foot. So the three of them were sitting there drinking, about an hour passed. And Foot says to Foot, Foot, and Foot, 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 I think I'm going to have to go outside. I don't feel too good. So Foot went outside, and Foot, Foot, and Foot, Foot, Foot were sitting there drinking. And about another hour passed, and Foot never came back in. So Foot, Foot says to Foot, 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 I wonder what's wrong with Foot. We better go outside and see. So here, when Foot, Foot, and Foot, Foot, Foot go outside, you know what they found? Foot was lying dead. You know what Foot, Foot says to Foot, Foot, Foot? I think we better go to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's one Foot in the grave already. You know, we can laugh at that, but that's the truth. That's the truth. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't living. I was existing. and had one foot in the grave and one out. And the decision that I had to make, did I want to go on living my way and put the one out in the grave and die, or did I want to follow the directions and do what they suggested in the program of alcoholics and one, and take that one out and live my life one day at a time? That's all it is. It's not a decision whether I can drink or whether I can't drink. This is a decision, do you want to live or do you want to die? You know, we assume everybody that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous can make this program. Why don't we read the book? It tells us that in the first chapter and how it works. There is some who cannot, and there is some who will not give themselves to this simple program. And it says, many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. I was very fortunate, I only pursued it to the gates of insanity. But you know, there's a word that I never had in my vocabulary, and that's the word yet. And that's what I'm here this morning for. I'm here to remind me where I come from. Because I'm a real alcoholic. And I'm an easy forgetter. And I bet I never forget where I come from. You know, we're starting making this an environment problem. This isn't an environment problem. When I came to the United States in 1957, I lived in a millionaire mansion. My sponsor to this country was the 7th richest man in America. And 16 years later, what was wrong? I was sleeping downtown in Cleveland in doorways. And it's not a feeling problem. My sponsor told me, you put your feelings with a rectal thermometer. And we're going to wait for them in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, we're getting mixed up. Fellowship and program. No, I heard the girl that said grace this morning, you know. Was there a preacher in the room? No. But I'm called a preacher. I preach the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know how you can sponsor somebody into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous if you're not in the big book. I thought that's why they wrote the big book. Was to put the program in it so it wouldn't get watered down. And I hear people talking about the spiritual side of the program. I was out eating one night and I heard this guy, he was on about the spiritual side. I went up to him after me and I wasn't even being nasty because I was very concerned. I says, can you tell me what the other side is? I'm still waiting an answer. And then we put this fear into you people, you know. We're telling them you're not ready to do a four-step, you know. You've got to be a year sober to do a four-step, you know. Where does it tell you that in the book? Where does it tell you that in the book? As far as I'm concerned, the four-step's the only one in the big book. It's got a timetable. I think it tells me after I've done the third step, I have to do the inventory at once. If I don't do that, then the third step will have little permanent effect. And they told me that alcohol was only a symptom. I had to get down to the causes and conditions. And this is what the fourth step is about. It's the first time in my life that I ever took a look at the real me at the age of 44. You know, I didn't want to take a look at the real me because I really knew what the real me was. You know, there used to be a group called the Platters. And they wrote a song for me. Oh yes, I'm the great pretender. Well, that's what I did all my life. I pretended I was something I was not. And anybody that has to do that isn't too well. You know? And I found out that's what the 12-step process is about. It's taking sick people like me to wellness. You know? I was told that any Alcoholics Anonymous is like any a bathtub. You know, you can fill a bathtub up full of water, but if you don't get in, you don't get clean. And I'm here to tell you this morning, and it's only my opinion, if you don't get into the 12-step process of Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't get well. You don't get well. And that's what it was all designed for. It was designed for a way of living. No, people say to me, how do you do the steps, John? You don't need to ask me how to do the steps. The steps tells you how to do them. The first step told me just to admit I was powerless over alcohol, my life was unmanageable. And then we're putting all these other things into it, and we're complicating it for these new people. Before long, you'll need to have a degree coming to Alcoholics Anonymous to understand it. And they say, these are suggested steps. And don't tell me that in the book. It says, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I said to this sponsor of mine, I says, I want what you've got, Russ. He says, well, John, it's very simple. If you want what we've got, then you're going to have to do what we do, or else you ain't going to get what we've got. And if you want what Alcoholics Anonymous has got to offer, then you're going to have to do what it suggests to do. And that's the 12 steps. And then we'll get people that's doing 4 steps. I know a girl that's been at it 2 years and she got 18 legal pads. Unbelievable, you know? And then I know another dude took this person they were sponsored up to Niagara Falls with the 4-step papers, and they teared them up in little pieces and they threw them in the falls. And I know a bunch of people who's in the chapel and they put them in a brass bowl and they light them and they burn them and they pray over them. Hey, don't tell you that in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if it's not in the big book, it's not the program of AA. Watch these people, it says, my program. They're dangerous. My program got me here, and my program will take me back out there. The AA program keeps me here. I call it God's program. I call it God's program. Because there's no doubt in my mind, God did for me what I could not do for myself. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous guaranteed me that if I would do what they suggested. Guaranteed me it. Guaranteed me. So we're getting all these myths, you know. Let me put the fear in here, but this 5th step. Very simple. Only tells you to do 3 things. You know? It's to take the garbage you find out in the 4th step. And the 4th step's know what I did. It's why I did it. Why I did it. They call them character defects. That's what it's about. And we take these, and the 5th step, and we admit them to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. What do we do that for? We admit it to God for forgiveness. We admit it to ourselves for understanding. And we admit it to another human being for humility. And Sister Ignatia said, they asked Sister Ignatia, if there was a gift she could get for God, what would it be? She says, if it's a syringe that size, full of humility, she can inject into an alcoholic. Till that balloon is burst, we're in trouble. And you know, we're getting this humility mixed up with humiliation. All humility is teachability. That's all. And I wasn't willing to become teachable for a long, long time. See, when I came here, I thought I knew everything. No, they were George Bush, Bill Clinton, and Don Selman, and an airplane, and here it crashed. And they all went up to heaven, you know. And before they could get into heaven, did they go in front of the Good Father? So the 3 of them standing there, and the Good Father comes in, and he sits on the throne, and he motions George up, and he says, and who are you? And George Bush says, oh, I'm George Bush, Father. He says, and what were you, George? He says, I'm the ex-president of the United States. He says, you come and sit on my left-hand side, you know. So he motions Billy Boy up, and Billy Boy goes up. He says, and who are you? And Billy Boy says, oh, I'm Bill Clinton, Father. He says, and what are you, Bill? He says, I'm the present president of the United States. He says, you come and sit on my right-hand side. So he motions Don Silman up, and he says, and who are you? And Don Silman says, oh, I'm Don Silman, Father. He says, and what are you, Don? And Don says, I'm a real alcoholic, and you're sitting in my chair. Only kidding, Bud, only kidding. And that's what it tells us in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've got to quit playing God. We've got to quit playing God. I was playing God all my life. I run the show, I directed the show, and I'm here to tell you this morning that 44 years later, my show never come off, and my show will never come off. Because I'll be a real alcoholic to the day I die, and I've never seen a real alcoholic show coming off yet. And you know what we're doing in Alcoholics Anonymous? We're creating pain. I thought it was addiction that created pain. Recovery eliminated pain. You know? And I'll get into that a wee bit later. But you know, God never treated me any different this morning than he treated any of you. No one bit. I believe we're each given two things each morning. And that's the gift of life and the power of choice. And how we want to live that. God's gift to me today was my sobriety. My gift to God is what I do with my sobriety. And what I was told to do with my sobriety is share it. To give it away so I can keep it. It's a gift for God. And another gift for God is the gift of common sense. The sad thing about common sense, it isn't too common. You know, they don't go to the universities to get a degree in common sense. You don't go into the doctor's office and see a certificate in common sense. It's a gift from God, and it's very seldom used. And the best definition I come up with for common sense is simplicity. Keep it simple. Don't lose it up. Don't lose it up. You know, there's nothing to the 6 and 7 step. That's why they only take less than half a page up in the big book. And God still gave me this choice in AA. He still gives me this choice in recovery. What did he say to me? He says, are you entirely ready, John, for me to remove this sickness? Yes or no? You're either ready to go well, or else you're ready to stay sick. Yes or no? You know? And you make the decision, yes, and then you humble ask them to do it. You know, we've got these dudes that's talking from podiums today. Excuse the expression, that's the way I feel, and I'm expressing my opinion. And I'm entitled to express my opinion. They stand up at podiums and they say, I don't want God to remove all my defects of character. I think it says all these defects of character. God don't want part of us. He wants the good and the bad. You know, self-justification to continue to do wrong. Well, that's like the alcoholic. He goes to the doctor, and the doctor tells him, you've got cancer. I'm going to have to do surgery and cut it all out, or else you're going to die. And you know what the alcoholic says to the doctor? Leave a wee bit in, I still want to be a wee bit sick. It's no any different. It's no any different. Yeah. I think it's through these steps very simple. Then he sponsor told me, get this 4-step paper out, John, we'll start at the 8th. And I didn't have to go through all that stuff again to make a list of these people that had harmed. And I had to add to it. And I've not been able to make all amends. Sometimes I still work them. There's some people know here that I can't make them. But it talks about that too. You know? And I believe once you went through the first 9 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's only my opinion, once you went through the first 9 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you finally got to the 24-hour program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I believe the 24-hour program of Alcoholics Anonymous, excuse me, is based in 10, 11, and 12. That's what I believe. That's what I've found out. What does 10 tell me to do? To continue to take this personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. There's nothing in a 10-step about a daily inventory. Nothing. Now, there's something in the 11-step about a daily inventory. Now, don't tell me to improve my feelings with God. Now, if I had to base my love for God on feelings, there's a lot of days I'm having when you love God. If I had to base my love for my wife and feelings, there's a lot of days I wouldn't love her. This is supposed to be love at any cost. They call it unconditional love. We're supposed to be an instrument of God. We're supposed to carry God's message, and God's message for the alcoholic is a result of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what it is. You know, what do we turn over to God? We turn over our will. What do we pray in the 11th step for? For the knowledge of God's will for us. For the knowledge of God's thinking for us. And you know, we don't even have the power to carry God's will out. It tells us instead we have to ask for the power to carry it out. So I'm totally nothing without the power of God. Without the power of God. And once we're through this process, you know, we're given this gift through the result of a spiritual awakening. How did we get to this spiritual awakening? It's a spiritual journey through the 12-step process. To me, each step takes a spiritual action. And through that spiritual action, we have a spiritual experience. And through these 11 spiritual experiences, we come to a spiritual awakening as a result of it. We try to carry this message and practice these principles in all our affairs. What principles are they talking about? They're talking about the principles we learned during the spiritual journey. Now, we can spirituality mixed up with a lot of things. And spirituality was defined to me very simple. All spirituality is being a decent, caring, loving human being. That's all spirituality is. Now, when I came in this program, they told me I was bankrupt mentally, physically, and spiritually. Then we're getting these people mentally well and physically well, but they're not getting spiritually well. That's a contradiction to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It tells me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've not only been mentally and physically ill, I've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, then the mental and physical conditions will return. And that's when we realize God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. See, God's no stupid. See, God gave man the power to help us mentally, and he gave man the power to help us physically, but he never gave man the power to help us spiritually. Because if he'd have given man all these three powers, then you wouldn't need God. All you need is Don Selman, or John Leach, or Bill Belville. But he never did that. See, it's an invitation we're given. And you either receive it, or you don't. It's like an invitation to a wedding. You either go to the wedding, or you don't go to it. And that's what God gives us. He gives us an invitation. And that's what I got. And you receive it or you don't receive it. And thank God somewhere along the line, quite a few years ago, nearly 21 years ago, I found the ability to accept the invitation. And that's the reason I'm here this morning. I'm going to talk about a few things. And the reason I talk about them is very important. See, it's not the things we share that gets us drunk. It's the things we're afraid to share that gets us drunk. They call them the secrets that we're afraid to share with anybody. And I had secrets for a long, long time. And it kept me drunk. And it wasn't until I was able to share these secrets have I been able to stay in sobriety. No, they're the things that caused us the most shame in our life and caused us the most guilt in our life. No, I believe that God has loved me all my life. Even though I was a sinner, I was a sinner in many things. And God loved the sinner. He just didn't love the sin. But I came to the United States in 1957. And I was engaged to a beautiful girl over there, and she came over and we got married. We were blessed with three children. A girl and three children go through total hell because they lived in the squirrel cage of an alcoholic home. There is no doubt in my mind this morning, not a shadow of doubt in my mind this morning, that alcoholism is a family disease. It didn't only affect me, affected everything around me. No, I don't know if I'd have put up with the crap if it had been, the shoe would have been in the other foot. I don't know if I'd have sat up during the night looking in the curtains to see if the drunk was home yet. And then as the drunk walked in the door, she ran back to bed, you know. And I got in, I pulled the clothes off her and tell her, you're not sleeping and all this crap. And I'm waking hard and the kids up. I was a monster. You put alcohol into this body, and this body becomes a monster. And this is the life we live. We're in this country for 8 years, and she wanted to go back to Scotland. And know what she told me? She said she was homesick. Now, that time, I believed her. But today, I know different. She wasn't homesick. She was sick and tired of living the way we were living. The way we were living. Anyway, we agreed to go back to Scotland, and we sold off everything we owned. And we moved in with my sister for 2 weeks prior to going to Scotland. And the Saturday afternoon, I'd get in with a party crowd, you know, in this time. And they were going to give us a big farewell party. Well, that Saturday afternoon, I decided I needed a haircut. I needed a haircut. See, I was playing Major League Soccer at that time. So I went for this haircut, which I didn't need. And I got this haircut, and I crossed the street to get a drink. I crossed the street to get a drink. And 5 weeks later, when I came out of a coma, I was told that I'd taken the life of a 21-year-old girl in an automobile accident. See, I didn't set out intentionally to take the life of a 21-year-old girl. I set out for a haircut, and I crossed the street to get a drink. But I'm a real alcoholic, and I'll be a real alcoholic to the day I die. When I die, I'm a dead real alcoholic. I am bodily and mentally different from my fellows. When I take a drink of alcohol, it affects me differently. It sets something off the call of physical craving. No, how sick are we? I lay in a body cast for 11 months. Never walked for 24 months. Get steel rods in my femur, steel plates in my arms, and 53 inches of scar in my body. And still wouldn't admit that I had a problem. That's how sick I was. It's not important I know how sick you were. It's important how I know how sick I was. Still wouldn't admit that I had a problem with alcohol. Because it took from 1963 to 1969 when I was given the privilege to go through Rosary Hall in Cleveland. And I stayed sober for 11 months and 7 days after my stay in Rosary Hall. And I get drunk. And you know how I get drunk? I never get drunk in resentment. I never get drunk in fear. I never get drunk in self-pity. You know why? Because you don't come in a jug. I get drunk because I took a drink of alcohol. I've never seen a person yet get drunk. It didn't take a drink of alcohol. And it was in and out, and in and out. In 1976, I was in the streets of Cleveland. And thank God for the Salvation Armies. I went through the Salvation Army in Cleveland, Ohio, 3 times in 2 months in 1976. And the last time I was in there, they suggested I should go to a place in Akron, you know. I could get in there out of the cold for the winter. And that's what I did. I went to Akron, Ohio. Thank God I went. Thank God I went. When I went to Akron, Ohio, do you know what I went with? My Kroger suitcase. I don't know if you know what a Kroger suitcase is. Where they got it down here? Payless or Foodless or whatever they call it. Yeah. They call it a brown paper bag. With two pair of pants, two shirts, and some dirty underwear. Anything that I have in my life today, I owe to God and to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the most important thing I have in my life today is me. That's what this is all about. The most important thing in my life is me. It's no Cadillacs, it's no boats, it's no this, all this material stuff. I get drunk over material stuff. I think that's why God gave me poverty, to make me wise. We've got to stop educating alcoholics. It's one of the worst things we can do. I worked in a treatment center, I've worked there for 21 years, and they're educating these people. And they're getting so smart, they know more than the teacher. You know something? When they leave, they don't stay sober. See, it tells us that in the big book. Self-knowledge will not keep us sober. Self-knowledge will not keep us... You know, I can read the big book day in, day out, every night, or quote it forever. The big book don't keep me sober. It's what I do with the information in the big book. How do you apply it to my daily life? It keeps me sober. That's what keeps me sober. In 1974, before I came to Akron, I'm a boat builder to trade, by the way. I got real involved in union, you know. And we've all got a conscience. And that day came in my life when I was no longer employable. I couldn't go to work in the morning unless I had 2 pints of garlic sherry to get me through to lunchtime. But I made a decision, another decision, one day. I told the big boss what to do with the job. I don't repeat the words in these rooms because I don't think they're appropriate. Any meeting open with a prayer and close with a prayer, I don't think there should be a vulgarity or profanity in between. And that's only my opinion. It's only my opinion. But anyway, he asked me where I was going. And I was in so much pain that day. This alcoholic mind told me there's a beer joint down at the bottom of this hill. And if I got a drink of alcohol, it would take away this pain. And that's where I went. And this was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know. And I went in there and I was sitting drinking, and this other person I'd never seen in my life before, he started talking. We drank all day. And about 8 o'clock that night, I told the barmaid to call my wife to come and get me because I'd been charged with manslaughter and my driving privileges suspended for the rest of my life. But anyway, my wife came and picked me up, and my youngest daughter at that time was Wee Mary. She was only 3 years old. She came with my mother to pick a drunken dad up. And they picked me up, and we went home, stashed up, and get beer and wine as I usually did. And later that evening, I knocked him to the door. And I opened the door, and here it was this person I'd been drinking with all day. And I allowed him in. And my wife told me to get him to hell out of there. See, he had never been a responsible husband. I'd never been a responsible father. Oh, it wasn't that I didn't want to be. When I married this girl, I wanted to be the best husband any girl ever had. When we decided to have children, I wanted to be the best father any children ever had. I wanted to be the best son any father and mother ever had. But if you suffer from the disease of alcoholism, it's an impossibility. Because the disease of alcoholism won't allow you to be that. It won't allow you to be that. The next thing I remember, I'm lying in a chair drunk all day, many night. And my kid's mother and my wife came in the front door, and she was shaking and she was trembling. And I asked her what was wrong. She said she tried to get this person to ride home and he tried to rape her. I asked her, she wanted to go to the hospital. She said, no. So she went upstairs and she went to bed, and I lay in my chair where I usually drunk. She got up the next morning and called off her work. And at the age of 37 that morning, lying in a Davenport in our living room, my children's mother and my wife was dead. But thank God she wasn't raped. See, I'm the guy that thought I was different. I'm the guy in 1969 that never thought that these things could happen to me. See, I didn't have the word yet in my vocabulary. No, maybe you've never experienced it. Maybe you have. And I hope to pray to God if you've never, you never have. And I never, ever want to forget it. I remember when that wee three-year-old girl would come up, and I'm lying in the chair drunk, and she'd pull me in the sleeve, and know what she'd say? Daddy, mommy's sleeping too long. Do you know what drunken daddy would tell her? Let her sleep. She'd come up and she'd pull me in the sleeve, and she'd say, Daddy, mommy's sleeping too long. You know what drunken daddy would say? Let her sleep. You know what the great fact is? Our drunken daddy didn't know our mommy was dead. See, that's how sick I was. And you know, that didn't keep me sober. You know why? Fear don't keep us sober. That's why we do an inventory on it in the fourth step. I don't fear alcohol today. I respect alcohol. I respect the power of alcohol in this body. You know, this whole thing could be said in 26 words. You could all go on the road and go home, you know. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found, and blind, but now I see. And that's what I think when we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, God gives us a new pair of glasses to see life differently. And there's only one way you're going to get these new glasses, and that's getting to the bathtub. You know, there's a lot of sayings we don't hear today that I got for the giants of Alcoholics Anonymous in Akinaya. There were an old gentleman come up to me one night and said, Scotty, you just remember, all we do is dress the wounds, God heals them. And I believe that. And the dressings that God gives us as the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, there was a saying that Sister Ignatia had, and we never hear them today, you know? Never hear them. Sister Ignatia had a statement, she says, don't have faith in any man or anything. Have faith in God and you'll have faith in all. Man will let you down and things will let you down, but God will never let you down. And that's the reason I'm here this morning, because God hasn't let me down in the last 21 years. Now I want to thank the committee for asking me and thank you for listening.